Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. I've got a really special three-part interview with copywriting email master Ben Settle. The title of the first part of this interview is called The Email Marketing Technique That Doubles Sales. Part one of the three-part interview with copywriting legend Ben Settle. Ben Settle has pretty much become the leader in email marketing. His style of infotainment combines storytelling with marketing, making readers entertained and curious so they're actually looking forward to his emails. And he sends out a lot of them too. Sometimes two or even three emails a day. But he says that's the kind of email marketing that doubles sales if done right. And in this three-part interview with Ben, you'll hear all about it. Ben didn't start out knowing how to do all this, though when he began in sales, he was so poor he had to live out of the office he was renting, taking showers at the gym, and sneaking around so his landlord wouldn't find out. All so he could sell multi-level marketing door-to-door. He knew there had to be a better way, and in part one, you'll hear the amazing story of how he stumbled onto copywriting and email marketing, how he used it to make money right away, and how he uses it today to double sales. You'll also hear exactly what attraction marketing is, why Ben only does the opposite, so he's thinning his herd of serial returners, lukewarm customers, and cheapskates, and how to make Ben's kind of repulsion marketing work for you. You'll learn the weird but effective way Ben would land his first copywriting client today if he had to start all over again in a new town with absolutely no contacts. You'll learn why it almost never works to say you've studied under Gary Halbert or Dan Kennedy or Jay Abraham or any of these other experts when you're marketing yourself as a copywriter, and the one can't-miss way that shows them you're worth taking a chance on. You also hear the one best way to build a list from a podcast. You'll learn what changed Ben's mind about Facebook marketing. After this, he got four times as many new paying subscribers. You'll hear examples of how Ben makes sure his products stand apart from his competitors and how he makes most of his money off the back end. You'll get an insider's look at Ben's three-step sales funnel. You'll also learn the one area Ben says all newbies need to get right before they even think about things like email marketing or Facebook ads that convert. Look, Ben says when it comes to marketing, everyone seems to be concerned with building a list, when that's just part of the equation for doubling your sales. If you concentrate on building an audience and a presence, you'll have lists from all over the place. Podcasts, social media, ebooks, websites, etc. Making your email marketing more strategic and targeted while making you more money. And in part one of this interview, you'll hear how to do that. Now let's get going.
There are people who, for some reason, think I'm kind of like a dick, but I'm not. I'm just trying to repulse the people I don't want. It comes off that way to some people. And if you do what I'm about to say, you will be called names probably once in a while. But I know people are way more hostile than I'll ever be out there, and I don't understand why I'm the one that always picked out with this.
So it's a strategy.
It's a strategy.
Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online, downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive. For the guests who are just now joining us, can you give out your URL website and tell them what to do when they get there?
Yeah, it's bensettle.com, and if you go there, you can either opt in or not opt in. It's up to you. If you do opt in, I will send you the first issue of my email players newsletter. It'll be a PDF, not the print version of the first issue. That's a very real $97 value. That's what it costs every month to be a member. No one ever gets a price break or anything like that. It's $97 a month. That's what that issue is legitimately worth. And it's got 24 different ways to make more money with your emails. I just went to like 24 things you can do, different openings and subject lines and approaches and ideas. And people absolutely make money on that just going through that free issue because that's the goal. I want them to get a taste of what I have to offer them. And what better way than show them how to actually make some more sales? So that's free. And if you don't opt in, that's fine too. You can go to the blog where I got well over 1,000 pages worth of content on there and a bunch of audio and video. It's all free. So it's yours for the taking. You can download it, listen to it, whatever you want to do. Unsettled.com.
Ben, for the listeners who don't really know who you are, never heard of you, give them a cliff note version of how you got your start.
Okay. I was in college in the mid to late 90s. And when I graduated, I knew I did not want to do the job thing forever. I just knew even at that age. I had an uncle pretty much the whole time I have been alive. I think he was in Amway. And he was always trying to prep me for when I was old enough to do it. So he'd always give me these, like, inspirational books and all that. So when I got out of college, all I could think of, well, if I'm going to do business, this is the only kind of business I know how to do is MLM. And I didn't join his thing. Fortunately for him, actually, this was like the last couple of days of college. I remember watching this infomercial that Kevin Trudeau was putting on. You remember Kevin Trudeau, the infomercial guy. And he did pretty good infomercials. And he was doing an infomercial on MLM. So he was generating his own leads to sponsor people in MLM through direct response TV. Now, I didn't understand what direct response or anything that meant back then, but I was definitely persuaded to want to do what he was doing. So I called the number, and a few days later, this guy called me. His name was Derek Scott, and we became good friends over the years, and he sponsored me into it. And it cost like $800. I was broke. I didn't have any money. I put it all on a credit card, got into debt. And that's what got me started in business. Now, a year and a half, I've gotten in so much debt. I have so many, buying all these leads and, you know, the $100 a month auto thing that they had you on, and all this other stuff, and just bad financial decisions. I was married at the time. And things had gotten so bad that I had to live in an office because I couldn't afford a real place. It was either go to this office, which is like $250 a month, or go live with my mother, with a wife, and those two did not get along very well, so the office it was. So we went to this office and lived there. It was a two-room office. There was a bathroom. There was a toilet, basically, in the sink. There was no shower or anything. That office was conjoined to the landlord's office, this older man who was on all these different prescription drugs and everything. And he was like, he'd always fly through that door like early in the morning, right when he came into the office to use the bathroom, because that was on our side. And we didn't really want him to know we were living there. That probably wouldn't have flown very well for him. So what we would do is every morning we'd get up at like 4 a.m. and we'd go down to the gym, go play basketball or whatever, and then shower there and get dressed, and then come back around 7 a.m. as if we're just coming in for the morning, right, to get some work done. Anyway, this went on for about 5 or 6 months, and then it was getting depressing, man. It was, like, embarrassing. I'm trying to, like, hide the fact that this was going on from all my friends and family because it was just humiliating. And we were both trying to, like, work this MLM deal where we were getting to the point where we'd go around town and hand out these audio cassette tapes. This was back in the cassette tape days. There was no MP3s, and barely anybody was probably even marketing online the way we know it today. And we were trying to hand out these cassette tapes and try to recruit local business people in, like, kind of like door-to-door. And getting laughed at and humiliated. You know, you're kind of getting that look from people like, oh, man, you poor schlubs. You know me, Mike. I'm like this introverted guy. I like to just hang out by myself most of the time. I don't really like talking to a lot of people and all that. I don't know why I got into that business, but whatever the case, it was very humiliating, very humbling. And one night, I remember it was like yesterday because it just seared into my brain. It was about 3 a.m. in the morning. We're both laying on the floor of the office. We didn't have a bed or anything. I was just depressed off my mind, dude. I'm like, this is just not working. I literally prayed to God that night and said, God, you don't want me doing this. I know you don't want me doing this because I suck at this. I hate being in this business. I hate everything about it. I hope there's something better for me. So I got up wide awake. I went into the other part of the office where the bookcase was, and I just kind of looked on the bookshelf just to keep my mind occupied on something. Pulled out this book called The 7 Lost Secrets of Success by Joe Vitale.
Was this the office owner's book or your book?
No, it was my book. And I'd read it a couple times before because it was a book of the month that the MLM company I was in sent us every month, a book of the month. And I liked it. It was a short book, and it's about this old school advertising guy named Bruce Barton. Now, hardly anybody everybody knows who Bruce Barton is today. I bet if you ask 1 in 1,000 people in marketing who Bruce Barton is, they wouldn't even know. Or maybe they might know because he was the second B in the BBDO ad agency, but most people have no clue who he is. But in the early to mid-1900s, this guy was like everything. He was a household name. Everyone knew who he was. He was an open enemy of, like, FDR. I mean, they both were public about that. You know, the President of the United States was his enemy. And he would advise Wall Street people, and he ran for Congress, and he helped found the BBDO agency, which is one of the biggest advertising agencies in the world. In fact, somebody even said at the time, it's hard to go anywhere, talk to anyone, and not hear the name Bruce Barton come up. And now he's a complete unknown, unfortunately. Which is ironic, because he was the kind of guy that would tell businesses like U.S. Steel, you can't stop advertising, or people are going to forget about you. Anyway, the book is about him, and these success secrets that Joe Vitale, like, pulled out of studying this guy's life. And it's still one of my favorite books. Anyway, I was just thumbing through it, and I turned to this page where he was telling the story about Bruce Barton back in 1919, which I believe was right on the tail end of World War I, and the economy was in shambles, and a lot of people were out of work. And he was this businessman in the big city, Chicago, I think, or New York, whatever. And this salesman actually came to him for advice in his office one day. And this guy just basically asked Bruce, like, help me, man, help me find a job. And it turned out that this guy who came to Bruce was known for being good at writing sales letters. He was a salesman, but apparently he had made a name for himself in the business of being good at sales letters. And Bruce Barton takes him to the window, and he goes, you're supposed to be good at writing sales letters. Why don't you write a letter to one of these buildings out there? And he's like showing them all the buildings in the city, selling them on hiring you. And, dude, there was something about that story that just clicked. I'm like, sales letters? You can get paid to write, like, you can sell through a letter. I don't have to go door-to-door or something, call leads and cold call and all that. I can actually sell just by writing. I mean, that's like an introvert's wet dream, right? That's like exactly what I was like, holy crap, I didn't even know there was this out there. I heard of the term copywriting and everything, but, you know, it was just like this vague notion. And that night, I got on the internet, started looking up sales letters and copywriting, and ran into, you know, the names Dan Kennedy and Gary Halbert and all the usual names that people tend to run into when they start studying direct response copywriting. And it was like a rabbit hole. I just jumped into it. At first, I tried to sell MLM using sales letters, and I actually did get some leads doing it, and it was kind of nice, but I realized that MLM just wasn't my thing, and I wanted to do freelancing. And wasn't long after that, maybe a couple years after that, where I actually ran into you and started working with you. And that's where I started really honing my abilities, because we were doing those projects where we were splitting everything 50-50. So if my ads didn't convert, neither of us got paid. But they did convert, and we sold some good stuff. And I remember paying off some debts and all kinds of stuff with it. And that's how I got started.
So you knew when you saw that, this is going to be my ticket out.
Yeah, I did. It was like the thing. Because you understand, when you're in MLM, at least at that time, I don't know how it is now, but at that time, it was very, very cultic. It's like, you got to do it our way. We have a system. It's got to be duplicatable, as they used to call it. You know, you can't go writing stuff, because that's not part of what we do. You got to put this VHS tape, but you had to use that, and you got to show the plan in their way. The whole idea of, like, writing a sales letter or generating your own list and all that and selling them maybe some kind of a low-cost lead gen like they do today in the MLM, or the smart people do. They call it a funded proposal, where basically you try to sell somebody a product on how to be better at network marketing. Generic, you're not promoting a company. People go through that product, and they're like, man, this person really knows what they're doing. Maybe I should have him sponsor me, which is a much smarter way of doing it. But back then, it was very, like, cultic. It was like, you have to do it this way. And you're, like, indoctrinated with this. And it never even occurred to me to, like, write sales letters or anything like that. But once I saw that you could do this and I saw it actually work, I'm like, I can't imagine doing anything else.
And it's your personality. And it's a dream job for anyone who wants to sit on their butt, have their own time, have their own privacy, and be able to make money from their kitchen table, literally.
It's the ultimate kitchen table thing. Back then, I was duplicating videotape. That's what I did as my job. I would go and duplicate tapes like Nightingale Conant and all these other clients and all that. And I somehow was able to get a spot on the second shift, which means, you know, at a certain time at night, like 7 o'clock at night, there was just nobody there except me. Even better than that, I was actually able to get my work done early. I would practice, like, handwriting ads out by hand and reading books and all that on the job. I remember we were working on the Art Hamill stuff. That was the how to buy a business using your own money. And I would listen to the interview you did with him over and over, like on my lunch breaks, the drive to and from work, and just on my regular break. I wouldn't sit there in the lunchroom with everyone. I would actually go out to my car and, like, try to work on myself, try to make myself better at copywriting or study something. Back in those days, I was really on this Eugene Schwartz kick about breakthrough advertising, and I had this goal to read it 10 times, and I was just immersing myself in this stuff. And you don't have to go to a college. college or university or anything. You can just do it right there at home or in a car or even at work.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Tell a story about your commute.
It was about a 30-minute commute, maybe sometimes longer, and I would do that commute, and I would just listen to stuff. Like, if I was working on a project, for example, remember that scooter port thing we were trying to sell?
Yes.
So, for example, the scooter port. I wouldn't listen to the radio or anything. I would put that interview that, or it wasn't even an interview, it was like a phone call that you did with the guy, and I would just listen to that over and over while I'm driving, so I was, like, imbibing myself with the product and how to sell this product and what to write, and there's a lot to be said for talking to a client, recording it, and then listening to it over and over and over to get in the head of the product you're trying to sell and that sort of thing. But that's what I would do. I would listen to that, or I'd listen to copywriting training. You know, I remember the Gene Schwartz product that you sell, and I would listen to that over and over and over. And whenever I made money, I would always, like, reinvest it. Especially in the beginning, I'd always reinvest it back into more education. So, for example, the first paying gig I ever got was on Elance, and this was probably back in 2002. I think I got paid, like, $800 for it or something. And so I didn't, like, spend that money. I actually took that money, and then I bought John Carlton's Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets course, and I bought this collection of Gary Halbert copywriting-themed newsletters from Scott Haynes, and I bought a bunch of books from, like, Dan Kennedy and that sort of thing. And I think that's important for people to do when you're just getting started out, is reinvest those profits, whatever it is you make, reinvest it. And what that's going to do, I have found, Michael, is, especially if you're broke like I was, it forces you to not fall for nonsense. You're not just going to fall for the latest hyped up launch or whatever. You actually do your homework on what you're going to buy. You don't just, like, buy stuff because everyone's buying it. You only have limited funds. You got to invest in something that's going to pay off. So I think being broke was actually an asset because I was just not making very much money at that time. If I had a bunch of disposable income, I'd probably be like these guys today, man. They just go around buying from every launch just because it's popular or whatever, just because they're getting caught up in the hype of it. And here's something interesting, Michael. Back in, like, May or June, I was talking to this lady. Her name is Michelle Spivey. I actually had her on my podcast to talk about this because she was telling me about how these biz-op-minded people and the people who just buy from one launch to the next and they never actually implement anything, whatever it is, you know, they just want to buy it. She says they're literally addicts. They get a dopamine drip every time they buy something new, and it gives them that excitement and thrill, and then now they're looking for that next hit. I'm just really glad I never got into that because I see a lot of people in that situation where they always want their next dopamine drip, and they don't understand that it's just a cycle. That's why these people will buy every ebook out there, and they'll buy every course out there, and they'll buy from every launch out there. This is not just copywriting, but just marketing in general. They buy everything, and they never get anywhere. They're always spinning their wheels. And I think that's a vicious cycle to be in. I think a lot of people need to be more aware that this is going on because there's a lot of addicts out there, man, and they don't even know it.
Here's a question from Alan Stacy. He says, Ben, Dan Kennedy talks about the no BS ways to build a herd. Ben, you often talk and write about thinning the herd. I'd like to know what techniques you find most effective in driving off the bum steers while corralling hungry heifers.
Interesting enough, back in 2007, I was approached by this guy, Mike Dillard, who's pretty big in the MLM training world, and he wanted me to write the sales letter for his magnetic sponsoring book, which is like his flagship product. And even to this day, nobody's beat that ad, but I learned something about that. They were big on what's called attraction marketing, and that's where you're trying to attract certain people to you that you want in your life and in your business and all that. And I think it's a perfectly valid way of marketing. I have no problem with it. But I have found that you also get a lot of the, what Alan would say, bum steers. That way, too, you attract a lot of what you don't want, too. That's just from my observation and in my own business. I'm not saying everyone else has that experience, but just for me. So I'm big on trying to do the opposite of what everyone else is doing. I don't know, maybe it's just a little rebel streak. Maybe I'm still a teenager, Michael, like your son there, and I just want to do what everyone else is not doing, what I'm told to do and not do it. But I had this idea, why don't I try something like the opposite, repulsion marketing. So I like to repulse people away. Because I have this theory at the time, and there's other people who have discovered it. I'm not like the first to discover this or anything. But there's a lot of people that have had the same experience where if you focus on repelling away the people you don't want, you kind of automatically do attract the people you do want, and sometimes you flip people to your side who normally wouldn't be, because you're being so blatantly honest. And that's how you repulse people, is by being blatantly honest. There are people who, for some reason, think I'm kind of like a dick, but I'm not. I'm just trying to repulse the people I don't want. It comes off that way to some people. And if you do what I'm about to say, you will be called names probably. I know people are way more hostile than I'll ever be out there, and I don't understand why I'm the one that always gets picked on with this, but whatever, it's all good.
So it's a strategy.
But it's a strategy. And here's the thing, it's not done as like a trick or anything. Like, it's just a righteous way by which I do business. I am going to repulse the people away. So, for example, I don't want the dopamine addicts. I could make a lot of money. I'd probably triple my sales if I did what everyone else is doing. I kind of tried to, I just went with that and put a new product out, like, all the time, like, you know, living launch to launch and all that, and serving that dopamine drip for people. I would probably make a lot of money, but I have a lot of headache because I don't want to deal with those people. I don't think they make very good customers. I think they tend to be complainers, refunders, and people wanting to charge backs and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't make them bad people. I just don't want them as customers. So to me, it's a righteous way of doing business. It's a philosophy by which I do business. It's like a rule and maxim by which I do business is I am going to try to repulse away the people I don't want. I wrote an email about what I was telling you about the dopamine trip and how they're literally addicts and all that. And I would write that because I want those people to know I don't want them buying. It's so weird because I will actually refund people's money right after they buy it, subscribe to my email players newsletter, for example, because I know that they've refunded a product of mine back when I used to have products that were out of offer refunds for, or somebody I know, because some of these people don't even realize that they've made a name for themselves. They're like, they're serial refunders, basically. I'm not going to give them an ounce of my knowledge. They don't deserve it. They're not going to do anything with it. If that's their mindset, you know, that's fine. If that's how they want to live their lives, but I don't want them in my customer list. I want a clean customer list of winners. I want people who are going to play to win and not play to not lose, which is what a lot of these people do. So I openly mock the people that I don't want. And I don't do it in like a way that's like, you know, passive-aggressive, and I'm just really blatant about stuff. You know, for example, in the sales letter I have for email players, and I'll talk about this in email sometimes, if you're someone who, like, complains about information overload, for example, do not buy from me. You're just going to be overloaded with more information. Anyone who would complain about too much information is not applying it. You know, there are certain people that I do like. We want information. Like, I can't imagine being overloaded with good information. I want good information. So I want people like that who are implementing and applying. I don't want people who are going to, like, complain that they got too much stuff and they can't handle it and, oh, my God, I'm overwhelmed. That means they're buying too much stuff. They probably are buying one thing after the other, looking for that dopamine drip, and they probably have a closet full of products they've never even really went through. And I don't want those people. I want to be the priority in somebody's purchase. Let's say somebody follows me and five other people. I want to be at the top of that pile. That's how you do it, by repulsing away the people you don't want. You have a much better chance of that happening. So that's kind of the way by which I do business. I'm not saying everybody should do it necessarily, but it sure does work for me.
Give me a couple of examples of some radio show personalities that have been very effective using this type of polarizing strategy.
Well, that's a very good question, because part of my inspiration has always been talk radio personality. Name any of the big ones. Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh. My personal favorite is Michael Savage. I haven't listened to him in a while, but I mean, I love listening to his show when I do. It's just that he has a lot of guests on lately, but when he's on, I mean, he's about as polarizing and as repulsive to the people he doesn't want in his audience as you're going to get. And here's the irony of it all, at least in the talk radio business. I've heard Rush Limbaugh say that 50% of his audience hates his guts. And yet they listen to see how much more mad they can get. So his haters are supporting his show because he gets to charge more money for advertising based on the number of people that listen to the show and all that. So he wants his haters and stuff on there. It's a little bit different from the way I run my business. Like, I don't really want people who are never going to buy from me. In fact, Michael, I have another philosophy by which way I like to do business. And it's based on the book of Revelation, of all things. There's this letter to one of the churches from Jesus, and he's like, you've done all these good things, but you're lukewarm. I would rather you be hot or cold. I'm going to spew you out because you're lukewarm. That's the way I look at managing customers and lists. I want to spew out the lukewarm people. I want people that are hot or cold. Just by what I teach, my personality, which I'm not trying to force anyone, it's just this is how I think. If I make someone cold where they're never going to buy, I have done them and myself a service because they're going to leave my list peacefully, most likely, and go on to other things. And that's fine. That's good for both of us. And then if I can make people hot for what I have, then they may not be able to buy right away, but eventually they'll buy if they can, when they can. I like having them around. They make great customers and all that. But the lukewarm people who just kind of hang around and they're just on your list to, I don't know, complain and, you know, they, oh, maybe sending me too many emails and all that. You know, and they complain instead of just, like, deleting your email or getting off your list or whatever. Those are the lukewarm people. Those are the people I want nothing to do with. My goal is to turn them hot or cold. And by trying to repulse them away, that's what's going to happen. They're either going to turn cold on me and leave, or they may, in some cases, actually become a believer in what I'm doing and stick around. That's a whole other way of doing things. I think it's kind of spew off, so to speak, the lukewarm people.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
You're listening to an interview with Ben Settle. Ben, why don't you give the listeners your website? What is your URL?
My website is www.bensettle.com. When you go there, you have a choice. You can either opt in or just go to the blog from there. If you opt in, I send you the first issue of my email players newsletter as a PDF. It's a print newsletter that's $97 a month. I send you that first issue as a PDF. It's got 24 ways in there that you can, like, immediately use to make more money with emails. I've had people say they made thousands of dollars just using that. You get that if you opt in. If you don't opt in, you can still go to the blog. I have well over, like, 1,000, maybe close to, like, 1,500 pages of content on there. And over a dozen hours of audio and video training that's all free. So either way, whether you opt in or you don't, there's a lot of stuff there worth checking out if you want to learn more about email.
Here's a question from Al Bravo. Ben, if you land in an unknown city with no money and no one knows you, how would you go about getting to write, or simply said, how would you start your copy business from zero? How do you get to convince that first client that will get you going?
It's kind of a two-part thing. You know, getting started is not necessarily the easiest thing in the world if you don't have a network in place, but it's not impossible, obviously. And first thing you got to know is what kind of clients to go for. A lot of people, if they were dropped in the middle of a city with a few dollars in their pocket and they wanted to start a copywriting business from scratch, they would probably go to companies that they think would need copywriting. They would just go to local businesses, chiropractors, and they would say, hey, you know, you could really use copywriting. Here's why you should hire me. That's the wrong way to do it. The first thing you should do is do some research on who's already using copywriting. So people who are already paying someone or several someones to write copy for them. You want to go after people who are already buying what you're selling. Just doing that, this applies to any kind of product, not just copywriting. It's hard to convince people to want to use copywriting and have them behave in a way. But if you go to a company that's already hiring copywriting, they're already tracking their copywriting, they're already testing stuff. Trust me, they're hungry for someone to come in and beat their control packages and all that, and they'll write better ads for them and make them an extra percentage point in sales. Those are the people to go after first. So that's the first thing, is research that. And then secondly, my copywriters don't want to hear this, but it's just, I'm telling you, if they want to do this fast, is start writing sales letters for your own product or service. I don't care if it's an affiliate. Like, you could go find a product that's really selling really good on ClickBank if you want, and maybe the sales letter isn't that great. Well, write your own sales letter, and then you'd be able to show a client, hey, look, I was able to make more sales than, you know, whatever, using this than when I used their ad. Or create your own product, which I think is even a better idea. Write your own ads for your own products and make some sales, and now you can honestly say, look, I write ads that make money. And it's funny, I've had this discussion with someone recently, Michael, where a lot of copywriters, and I've seen this over and over and over, including from people that I have a lot of respect for and all that. I haven't talked to any of them about this, but I always wonder if they would agree with this or not. A lot of the newer people will go around and they will promote themselves by saying, I studied under Jay Abraham and Dan Kennedy, I study all their stuff, as if that's like going to benefit them. It kind of makes them look amateurish. It's like, who's more likely to get a job? Somebody says, well, I studied Dan Kennedy and Gary Bensavanga, which is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with studying those guys. I do. But it's not a selling point for getting clients. Most clients don't care. Even if they're like a Gary Halbert fanboy, it's not gonna hurt to say, you know, I've studied under Gary Halbert. But what's more important is you say, look, I've written ads, and here's the response I've got. Or I sell my own stuff. I don't just do this for clients. I do it for my own stuff. So this is real-world experience. I don't rely on theory and hearsay. I actually know it works. That's how I would go about it. Those two things. You find someone who's already buying copywriting services, and you sell your own stuff before you even approach any of these guys, and you show them that you're worth taking a chance on. And chances are, if you go after the right people, they'd be happy to give you a chance. They just don't want to waste their time with anyone.
Dave from Florida wants to know, Ben, how much have you and Jonathan, your producer for your podcast, tracked directly to your bottom lines from the podcast and from what sources?
I started the podcast the first week of February 2014, so like a year and a half ago. And the reason I started is because a few months before that, I had a conversation with this guy named Danny Imey. His thing was, he's called the Freddy Krueger of blogging. That was like how he got his start and all that. even more important than that, he kind of got me thinking differently about lists and all that. And he's big on showing people not how just to build a list, but how to build an audience. An audience is made up of more than just a list. The bigger your audience, probably the more money you're going to make. A list is part of your audience, your email list. Your direct mail list would be part of your audience. Your social media list is part of your audience. Altogether, they're all part of an audience. Take a talk radio guy. Like, let's say Rush Limbaugh. His listeners are part of his audience. But not all of his listeners are necessarily on his email list. And not everyone on his email list is listening to all of his shows. And people who follow him probably on social media, if he's even on social media, are not all necessarily listening to every show, and they're not all on his email list. It's like the audience encompasses all these different corners of your market that you can be exposed to. And it got me thinking about that, and I started thinking about how maybe I should do a podcast. This is like something I knew some people were doing one. It's something I wanted to do just to hone my communication skills, which is something I'm always trying to do. And that year I actually did some public speaking too, so I wanted to get kind of more comfortable with it. So I started the podcast. What happened was in early January, I think it was like January 1st, that year, it was like a New Year's Day email I sent out telling about my goals for the year. And one of our goals for 2014 was to start a podcast. I had no idea how to do it. I didn't know the technical aspects of it. I had no idea how to get on iTunes or any of that. And my friend Jonathan Rivera, who's been a customer of mine, email player subscriber since like 2011, he goes, you know, Ben, I'd like to help you with that. I'd like to be a part of that. As far as I know, he had never done any podcast stuff at that point. So we were kind of learning it together. He became the producer. He has like a team in place of like audio people and all this stuff, and we pay them through the profits from the show. We took a little bit longer selling stuff than we should have. That's a big mistake. We should have been selling stuff. That has its own list that's independent of my list. He runs that list. He takes care of the customer service and all that. He's kind of created his own little thing now that's called the Podcast Factory, where he produces a lot of shows. So anyway, that's how I got started. It's kind of hard to track like if a split listener, how they found you and all this. I can tell you this. My sales have definitely gone up. Now, whether they've gone up from that or something else, I can't say for sure. But I have had 10 or more people have told me that they found me through my podcast, and then they started reading my other stuff, and now they're a customer. And that's just the people who are telling me. So for every person who's telling you this, there's probably more people who aren't. I would say it's very worth it. It has been worth definitely the time and energy. I would do it, though, Michael. I honestly would do it just to do it because to me it's like therapy. I get to get on there for 20 minutes and just rant about whatever. I like doing it. Like, it's a nice income stream and all that. It's starting to turn into one at least. You know, my goal is for Jonathan and I to both make 5 figures just from that each, but that may be a little off.
How do you build a list from that podcast? At the beginning of the podcast, do you direct someone to a website specifically for the podcast list?
It's not at the beginning. It's in the middle and at the end. There's like this little commercial. This lady comes on. I recently found another girl to do the voice. We're just like 3 months ahead, so it's going to be a while for that. But a voice comes on and says, would you like a transcript of today's show? Because there's a lot of people who don't necessarily want to have to listen to it. Maybe they want to read it and be able to dissect it. Well, if they opt in, they get a weekly transcript of every show. So that's kind of like the carrot. But I've also added in the free email players issue, too, that I give away on my regular site if they opt in. And what happens, it goes out every Sunday. We have a new podcast episode up. Usually that Saturday, I'll promote my podcast. I'll tease them about what's going to be talked about on Sunday, and then I'll send them to the iTunes site so they can start listening to the show beforehand, hopefully, and they can download past episodes. We're at like 82 episodes now, so there's a lot for them to do. It's a very responsive list. We recently did an affiliate campaign selling Ken McCarthy's copywriting course. This is kind of an interesting thing we've done, which just kind of occurred to me when we were putting it together. I was like, Jonathan, let's try something here. Let's do an in-depth interview with Ken. We'll do like a 2-hour interview with him, and we'll break it up into 4 parts, and then we'll make it like a 4-part podcast that goes out over the weekend. So we had one episode go out on Thursday, one go out on Friday, one Saturday, one Sunday. It was all the same interview, just chopped up into 4 parts. Like the first part was about headlines, the second part was about bullets, and then I don't think we promoted his course in each one until that Sunday.
Did he come on the podcast show, or did you interview him individually?
You know, it's funny because he's like the founding father of internet marketing, but he's like, dude, I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't even know how to hook up a mic to my computer. So it wasn't like this high-level audio that we usually have talking to microphones on. It was a phone interview. It wasn't even the best connection, so we had to do it that way. We had to record a phone call and just chopped it into 4 parts. I promoted that all weekend from Thursday to Sunday, just the podcast. I didn't promote his product at all to my main list because I wanted to do an experiment here. But during listening to his interview. And then Sunday, like, blast him with, like, 5 or 6 or 7 emails, just the way we always do it.
How much was this course sell for?
It was, like, $1,000.
And this was just to the podcast list?
Just to the podcast list. I never promoted it once to my main list. You know, I wanted to see how responsive the podcast list was. So here's what happened. On Monday, I go, Jonathan, so how many sales did we make? He's like, he showed me the stats. We had, like, it was, like, 500 clicks and 0 sales. According to the affiliate thing. I'm like, wow, I guess that was a bust, right? Whatever. Turns out, though, that the affiliate thing just was lagging a little. The software didn't register the sales until that Monday afternoon. And we ended up, I'm not going to say how many sales we got, but I can tell you right now, it came out to like $28 a click. It was a pretty successful, way beyond what I thought it was going to be promotion. It was so successful that Ken even's like, man, can I just like license the campaign you used, like exactly, so that, and I'll pay you half the sales or whatever my affiliates make. I was all for it. That was a great idea.
Yeah.
And then I had to tell them, I go, well, Ken, to be honest with you, unless they have the exact same bond with their list that I have with mine, and then unless they want to say they're me, because the emails were all very me-oriented because of the actual experiences I've had working with Ken and everything, they're not going to even get near that. And he's like, yeah, you're right. So like I said, it probably wouldn't work. But that's how well it did. He wanted to license it. Like, he wanted to capture that, bottle it, and reproduce it, which made perfect sense. But the way I do emails, it's kind of hard to pass my emails off to someone else, to do that. It wouldn't work.
So the whole 4 parts were done over the weekend, provided for anyone to listen to over the weekend, and at the same time you did the email promotion while it was being promoted?
Yes, and I'm going to be doing this again, actually, at the end of the year with Ryan Kurtz's Titans of Direct Response product, because I sold that very successfully. In fact, I don't know for sure who's done the best of his affiliates, but at the time, this was like a month or two ago, first of all, I don't know if you've ever met Brian, because he's like the classiest guy, I think, in our industry. He makes you want to be a better person just talking to this guy. He's like, Ben, you're an affiliate. I just want you to know that, like, he goes, you're beating Glazer Kennedy in her circle. You're beating Joe Polish. You're beating these other couple people. He goes, you're doing better than all of them as far as, like, actual conversions to sales. But I'm thinking, there's something to the way I email for affiliate marketers, because people ask me all the time, can I use your system for affiliate marketing? I'm like, I use it all the time for affiliate marketing. My friend Ryan Levesque, he's got this product where he shows you how to, like, survey your list and all that. And it's a very, very good product. And he had a whole bunch of people who were promoting him. This was about a year ago. And including people who sell funnel products themselves. So their lists are far more, like, likely to buy than my list. And I kind of half-assed my promotion because I was really burned out and I was about to go on vacation and all that. And I still beat the closest guy by, like, 28%. In fact, one of his affiliates was, like, joking with me. He's like, God, Ben, I hate you. Because these guys should have been able to beat me just because their lists are more tuned to this. But it's just the way by which I do email and the way I teach people. It works even better, I think, for affiliate marketing probably than even for your own products, because you're standing out from everybody.
No, I remember we emailed back and forth. You did incredible on that promotion. I didn't realize that other people were promoting it at the same time. I thought you approached them and it was a product that had already been promoted, and you said, can I be an affiliate and just promote this on your own? I didn't realize it was an active, ongoing affiliate promotion with others at the same time.
It was. When I was promoting it, I don't know who, if anyone, was promoting it at the same time I was. There were at least 3 people I can think of who told me, God, man, could I give all these bonuses if they buy from me? Like, over almost $6,000 in actual retail value bonuses, including hard copy stuff I was giving away to people who bought from me because the commission was so big and it paid for it. There were at least 3 people who said, you know, Ben, had I known you were going to do this, I would have waited to buy from you. You know, that's part of the thing. You got to give real value. Most people, like, when they do bonuses, right, like, they say, if you buy this affiliate product, send me your receipt, and I give you this bonus, and that's fine. Most people don't do it right. Most people are very lazy with that, and they just attach whatever phony retail value they want to it. My bonuses always have a real retail value. Like, for example, one of the bonuses they got was this book I have called Crypto Marketing Secrets, which was the entire 30 issues run of my crypto marketing newsletter I used to sell, all bound in one book. Every issue cost $27 when that was going. That was like $810 of actual retail value in that book. So if there's anything to be said about bonuses, is you got to make them real retail value. You'll fool some people. They'll get all excited, like the people looking for a dopamine high and all that. Don't buy whatever you put out there. If you want the skeptics, I believe the skeptics are like 5 times bigger part of the market than these hyper buyers. If you want to get them, you have to offer them true value. It can't be like this fake stuff. Oh, you just download all this air. You and I have talked about that. Try to give physical stuff that you actually mail to people. They will appreciate it so much more. Talk about a dopamine drip. Do you know this, Michael, that you get an email, your brain gets a little dopamine drip. That's why we all keep checking our emails throughout the day. It's kind of exciting. Probably goes the same with texts and instant messages and everything else. When you get an actual physical piece of mail that you want, that you're looking forward, it's like 100 times stronger. That's a whole different animal than these hyperbars. I mean, you're rewarding somebody with the dopamine drip. You're not just trying to geek one out of them. And, you know, they've earned it. And it's just a whole different thing, and people appreciate it so much more. And talk about being on the top of the pile. You know, there are people who will argue with me about this. Well, everything should be digital. I'm like, you know what? The fact that everybody else is doing digital means that when my physical product comes to them in the mail, it gets all the attention. It's what's on the bookshelf. It's what's on their desk. It doesn't get lost in a sea of other digital stuff. And there are arguments to be made for both sides. I understand that. And for some products, I think digital is better. But I'm talking about high-ticket stuff. It's amazing so few people do it.
Would you advise anyone who is all digital currently to integrate some form of their product delivery as a physical product? And tell me, you were all digital and you went with your physical email players newsletter. What has that meant for you?
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
This is a very timely question because I'm going to be speaking about this in Connecticut at this guy Ryan Lee's event called Freedom Fest. I have a 3-step funnel. My funnel is as follows, and I'm not saying I couldn't do more. I could. I got the free opt-in, and then once they're on my list, I sell them into email players, which is a physical product that gets mailed to them. My back-end sales, rarely do I sell anything by email to my customers. I do it once in a while, but most of the stuff they get is included in the envelope that they get with email players. I'm already paying to have this thing sent out, this envelope. It doesn't make any sense not to slip an advertisement in there. For example, in every issue practically, I put like a 1 or 2 page little promotion for a back issue that's popular. So the 2 popular ones I have are how I do my launch process, just using email. And the other one is just my business structure, kind of like I'm explaining here. For some reason, those are the 2 highest selling back issues I have. So I usually put an ad for one of those 2 in each issue, and I get some sales. Sometimes I'll include a catalog of all the back issues for sale with teaser bullets. That's one way I get back in sales, using direct mail, from an email, which starts with an email list. The second way is I sometimes will put an affiliate offer in there. So, for example, I had already done all the work to sell Brian Kurtz's Titans of Direct Response thing back in May. I asked him, can I do this again in July to my email player subscribers? And he's like, yeah, go ahead. So I put like the 6-page insert in there that just explains the bonuses they get if they buy from my link. And we got a couple sales last month from this. I made like $1,800 just by slipping a few pages of paper in the envelope that's already going out. So that's the extent of my funnel.
For the guests who are just now joining us, can you give out your URL website and tell them what to do when they get there?
Yeah, it's bensettle.com. And if you go there, you can either opt in or not opt in. It's up to you. If you do opt in, I will send you the first issue of my email players newsletter. It'll be a PDF, not the print version of the first issue. That's a very real $97 value. That's what it costs every month to be a member. No one ever gets a price break or anything like that. It's $97 a month. That's what that issue is legitimately worth. And it's got 24 different ways to make more money with your emails. I just went to like 24 things you can do, different openings and subject lines and approaches and ideas. And people absolutely make money on that just going through that free issue because that's the goal. I want them to get a taste of what I have to offer them. And what better way than show them how to actually make some more sales? So that's free. And if you don't opt in, that's fine too. You can go to the blog where I got well over 1,000 pages worth of content on there and a bunch of audio and video. It's all free. So it's yours for the taking. You can download it, listen to it, whatever you want to do. Bensettle.com.
All right, let me recap your funnel. Get them on your list, free opt-in. Sell them on email players, your subscription-based physical email newsletter, and then back-end from the physical offers in the newsletter.
And I'll tell you what, if I was more motivated, I would be snail-mailing offers to those buyers all month. I'd probably send at least 3 promotions a month. I'm just not that motivated. Right now, I'm more focused on getting paid traffic. So, for example, from February to, like, June, I was using paid Facebook traffic. My friend Shane Hunter, he was doing it all for me. He's just a genius at this stuff. And, I mean, my subscription rate went way up. I mean, like, holy crap, I was sold on paid advertising. Up until then, I had just, like, gotten organic traffic from the search engines and word of mouth and doing a lot of podcast interviews, which I find are very good for getting quality traffic and sales. Then him and I both promoted our friend Ray Higdon's 3-Minute Expert product back in June, And for some reason, Facebook thought we were promoting a biz op, which we weren't. That's Facebook advertising for you. It happens all the time because they shut you down for no reason. And I got banned from using Facebook advertising. So I could probably get back on there, but why waste my time?
Or tell me what he did to your subscription. Shane Hunter, he was doing it all. What did you see occur? You weren't a big believer at first in Facebook advertising, were you?
I was a big believer in paid advertising. I just didn't know how to do it, and it didn't appeal to me to spend time doing it. It doesn't excite me to do it, and it would be like a chore, and I would hate it. I can just tell you this. I know I got at least four times as many new paying email player subscribers during those 4 months than I would have had I not used them. But it was just crazy. It took me way past my goal. I'll tell you this. And I mentioned my friend Ray Higdon. I spoke at one of his masterminds last year in October. I was there to speak. I wasn't necessarily there to learn. But he said something during that thing that just stuck with me. And he said, you can't scale free. For example, let's say you're getting traffic from paid Facebook ads. You find an ad in a campaign that's working really well. We were just spending like $10 a day at the time. See, once you get it working, you want to throw as much money as you can. It doesn't make sense to not spend all the money you can because you know it's going to bring you more money back. You can't do that with free. You can't predict it. You can't control it. You can't control what the search engines are going to send you. You can't control who's going to listen to a podcast. You can't rule it out, as they'd say in direct mail.
You were impressed with the results with Facebook, and you were using the same funnel. Get them on your free list, sell them email players, and then back in sales from the physical newsletter, correct?
That's been my funnel for over 4 years now. That's all I do. I've got it so simplified. I got to say a warning here, though, for people listening to this. I can get away with this because I'm pretty good at what I do, and I email daily, and I'm aggressive, and I've created a persona that people tend to like. I have things in place that most people don't have. I only say this because selling a $100 a month continuity out the gate like that is not easy for a lot of people to do. For most people who ask me about this, I recommend they sell like a flagship product. So, for example, if they're in a weight loss niche, sell the ebook that's about your philosophy of doing things and, you know, helps them lose weight, and then try to get them in continuity. I kind of skip that part, and I just get them right into continuity. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying that people should be careful. Don't just do it because, oh, Ben's doing it work. It took me 11 years to get that to work. I could never have done that out the gate.
How about cancellations? How long does an average player's subscriber stay on?
You always get cancellations. You get people come back, too. But see, here's one of the things I do to prevent certain people from coming back, which again, if I didn't do these things, I'd probably make a lot more money, but I'd be more miserable. And that is, if I see somebody just subscribed, and they didn't even get it like a few months before they left, I don't let them come back because they don't have the right mindset. This is a long-term thing. This is something that you're going to learn long-term. And if you think you've learned it all, you're crazy because I've been doing this for a long time and I haven't even learned it all. I'm always teaching the new stuff I'm learning. And all it takes is one idea per issue. You can put a lot of money. My goal is this. There's no way an issue is going to be going out where I, like, phone it in and I just put some crap in there. It's got to be stuff that has made me far more than the $97 than they're paying so that if they implement, there's no way they're not going to make their money back in spades. If they haven't given it a few months, it's kind of like someone who maybe they take a health supplement, right, and they take it for 30 days. Oh, nothing's happening. Nothing's changed. It's just soft. Well, it takes a few months to let something build up in your system. They're bored. Or someone's like, go once to the gym. Oh, man, I'm sore, I hurt, but I didn't really get bigger. You know, I forget, this doesn't work. That's the mindset these guys have, and I don't want them back. So even if they try to get back on, I don't let them. Once in a while, somebody will sneak through. They don't last long. They usually quit right away again, which, again, it doesn't cost me anything other than it's like I don't want to give people like that any of my knowledge. I think that they're better off getting a job. They've wasted their money. I've done them a disservice in a sense by letting them come back. Because I know they're not going to use that information. I know they're not going to profit from it. They probably just wanted their little dopamine drip and their own head. I don't want to fund their addiction. I don't like letting people back who haven't stuck around for a while.
Give the URL address of your website and then tell me, what's the big promise that your email newsletter is going to provide someone?
My main website is www.bensettle.com. And if you opt in, I'll give you the first issue of Email Players free as a PDF. It's a print newsletter, but I'll give you the PDF of the first issue. It's a very real $97 retail value. I'm going to show you how to double your sales using email. To some people, that sounds like kind of a big claim. I think it's a small claim. In fact, I recently asked my podcast producer, Jonathan Rivera, on the air. I put him on the spot. He could say whatever he wanted. I said, do you think it's doubled your sales? He goes, double? He goes, I can't even put a number to it. It's like 10 times, 20 times, 30 times more sales. It's like, double is like a small number. Michael, you're living proof of this. When you started emailing the way I show, your sales completely went up. I know they at least like doubled than what they were, probably more than that. And that's what I show people how to do. Is it going to work for every single person? No, because there's a lot of people who don't have a lift. There's people who don't have an offer that's converting already. It's not going to create sales for you. It's just going to multiply your current sales. That's all any kind of copywriting can do. A lot of people look to copywriting especially as like some kind of savior. Like, I need a sales letter. But they don't have an offer in place. They have no good positioning. They don't have everything else that they need to make sales. And if that's you listening to this, it's not going to help you. You got to at least have a working offer, something that's selling already for it to double sales. You can't double zero. You got to have something coming in already.
Let's talk a little bit about the lifestyle. What does a typical day look like for Ben Settle?
It's a little bit different depending on what time of the year it is. Right now I'm spending almost all my working day on my next novel, my third novel, which should be completed by mid-September, hopefully. Right now I get up and I work on that for a few hours. I've already written all my emails for the next month and a half. They're already preloaded in the autoresponder as of today. And so I don't have to think about this. The rest of the time, like on a typical part of the year, I'm not working on this novel. It's pretty simple. I get up, I write an email. Usually I write the next day's email, so I write them a day before usually, because I don't like being under pressure. And then I go off and I just, most of the time I don't do much after that. I'll go wine tasting, or I'll go play with the dog, or I'll go do something else, or I'll go take off for the coast. Recently, I've got part ownership in a golf company, so I work on that whenever they need something, which lately hasn't been very much, but eventually I think that's going to take more of my time. It's a pretty laid-back lifestyle. Yeah, I joke that I'm like a bum who gets paid because I wanted to just only do one thing. I didn't want to do all this other stuff. I just wanted to be lazy. I could get away with writing an email a day, take me about 15 minutes, and be done. Okay, so I got divorced in 2012, and I moved from the state of Washington, a town called Long Beach, back to Gold Beach, Oregon. Well, I'm hoping to move again, probably, near their abandoned. But I moved back down there. I was really burned out. I had worked my ass off, like, for years, doing client stuff and stuff on retainer, trying to sell my own stuff, failure after failure. I finally got an email players launched, like, maybe 9 months earlier. And I was burned out because I was trying to, like, write a lot of issues ahead of time and all that kind of stuff to be ahead. It took me, like, a year to get unburned out. And I can tell you right now, most of my days, I would just recycle emails from, like, a year earlier. So we're talking 2 minutes of work. And then I'd go walk my dog on the beach for several hours. And I really didn't do that. I was just so burned out. I could never have done that if I didn't have things set up the way I do.
What about your email player's newsletter? Do you have issues already done for the next several months? And if not, how much time does it take to create an issue, and how do you schedule that?
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.
I try to stay 3 months ahead. That doesn't mean they're ready to go, but they're like 90% ready to go 3 months ahead. It's like a first draft. I try to add like a bonus thing every month. Most months I do like some kind of bonus like interview or something. Just something just to make it a little bit more interesting and more valuable. But generally speaking, it takes me 2 to 3 hours to write an issue because I'm always thinking about this stuff. I'm always doing this stuff. I have stories and ideas and case studies and all this already sitting in my head. And I have examples from my own emails that I'm using or have used. It doesn't take me a whole lot of time. Now, that said, there are some issues that take me a lot of time. I've done issues like the one I told you about that just explained the business structure I use. That took me a long time because, man, I had to sit there and really think about it. Like, I don't have a lot of white space in my issues. I mean, you get it every month. There's not a lot of white space in there. It's like people even say, man, haven't you ever heard of, like, the return key? Great paragraph stuff. But I don't. I want to keep it exactly 16 pages so it's predictable. You know what they're going to get. And this is kind of a paradox for most people when they hear this, but when I give too much information away, I tend to get people saying, man, I just can't keep up with this. This is too much. And I get it. I'm the same way. You can't, like, overfeed somebody. You want to feed someone, but you don't want them bloated and they can't move, like if you were to feed someone food. You want to give them enough so they're satisfied, but not full. Satisfied, they have enough information to implement, to make money, to make their money back in spades, and not have, like, analysis paralysis. So it's kind of a weird paradox, but keeping it at exactly the same page number every month, it's less overwhelming for people, and as long as I'm delivering good value, they're going to make their money back. It's just, to me, it's not even an issue, and it's not an issue for them either. By giving too much, it's like, where do I start? This is too much, and we're all like that. In a way, I understand the information overload people, but I don't want people to complain about that buying, because those tend to be people who are just looking for excuses.
Question from Miracle from the Philippines. Ben, I'm an aspiring copywriter and learned that there are lots of copywriting jobs that I can do, like writing copy for ads, like Facebook and Google AdWords, writing emails, writing sales letters, writing videos and sales scripts, etc. Should I focus on learning email copywriting first?
You know, I can't answer that for somebody. Everybody's got to do their own thing. You know, not everybody likes writing emails, especially daily. I mean, it can drag on some people. Focus on your strength. Whatever it is that you're the best at of all the stuff that you can do, video scripts or Facebook ads or whatever, focus on becoming the best at that, or at least excelling at it. It's always subjective who the best is, but excelling at that thing that you're already good at. Take that thing and specialize in it. And now when you bill yourself to clients, you are the specialist, for example, at writing Facebook ads that convert. Somebody who's looking for someone to write their Facebook ad, if they can choose between you and some person who's got a whole menu of things they do, but they don't specialize, they're probably going to pick you. Because I'll tell you what, when it comes to paid advertising especially, every percentage of conversion counts. People don't want a half-ass job. So find whatever it is that you like doing the most. And for a lot of people, they discover it's not email. They don't want to email a lot. They don't like doing it. They have a hard time. But a lot of copywriters are good at other stuff. So everyone has a thing they're strong at. Focus on your strength.
That's the end of part one of our three-part interview with Ben Settle. Please continue to part two.